Hope everyone's doing well. Let me start by asking some rhetorical questions. Do you want to grow in your faith? Do you want your children and your grandchildren to become followers of Christ when they grow up? Do you want to effectively share your faith with your family, your friends, and your coworkers? I say rhetorical questions because you're all here on a Sunday morning. I know the answer to those is yes, for you and for me. So that's why this morning I invite you to put Mark 12:30 into practice. We're all familiar with this verse. Love the Lord your God with your whole being, heart, soul, mind, and strength. This morning, I encourage you to engage your mind as a form of worship. I think sometimes people outside the church think that we have to check our brain as we walk in the door of church. And that's just not the case. Mark 12:30 clearly shows us that we need to engage our minds, and that is a form of worship. So we're going to ask and answer some questions that are fundamental to our faith this morning. How many of you have heard questions like these? You might have asked them or someone has asked them of you. Did God literally make the universe and everything in it in 6 days? Is the earth really 6,000 years old? Well, doesn't radiometric dating prove millions of years? And then the questions go on and on and on. I know you've heard things like this. You've probably asked them yourself. They're very common questions. At CMI, our goal is to provide you with credible answers that affirm the Bible with particular emphasis on Genesis. My job this morning is not to answer all of these questions or all of your questions. It's impossible to do in the short time we have. So what I want to do is show you where and how you can find answers. And we need to do this because you need to be prepared. We need to be prepared, myself included, because family, friends, children, grandchildren are going to ask questions about evolution and creation. The first place that you go for information these days is the internet, and you probably all go to Google for just about everything, or ask Siri. I don't want you to do that for these questions. Go to the internet, but go to creation.com. And chances are one of the more than 14,500 articles videos will already address the question that you have. So if you hear something on the news that doesn't line up with what you know to be true in the Bible or what Pastor Tom is teaching each week, go to creation.com, use the search tool. And if you happen to pick or find a question that is not in here, send us an email. We've got a full-time staff of researchers that regularly update articles, create new ones, write books, and maybe one of your questions becomes a seed for a new resource. Your children and grandchildren are going to ask questions, so that's part of the reason. And we know the verse for this series that Pastor Tom selected was 1 Peter 3:15. We need to be prepared, and it might go something like this, right? Father comes home from work, or mom comes home from work. What did you learn at school today? Oh, it was really interesting. We learned that humans evolved from ape-like creatures millions of years ago. Isn't that amazing, Dad? Isn't that amazing, Mom? Cartoon Dad has a deer in the headlights look. Does not know how to answer that. Now, you might know from church that the Bible doesn't agree with that statement from the child, but put yourself in his shoes. How would you answer the question? As I said, 1 Peter 3:15 tells us we always need to be prepared to give an answer to anyone who asks you, to give the reason for the hope that you have, and that includes questions about creation and evolution. The first part of the verse is revere Christ as Lord. That's the reason we do this. But the last part of the verse is so important too. Do this with gentleness and respect. You can't argue someone into agreement. It doesn't work. I've been guilty of trying on a number of occasions. It doesn't work. We need to do it gently, respectfully, listen, and present the information in a clear way. So in addition to the website, creation.com, there's another way where you can regularly get information to help address these tough issues, and that's to sign up for our free email newsletter. So if I could have the ushers pass out those clipboards, as they're passing them around, if you feel that you'd like to have some more information on a regular basis, every other week you'll get an email that has some questions answered. I just need three pieces of information this morning: your name, your email address, and your zip code. Your zip code is because if we come to your area, we'll send an email and you'll be able to attend. And some of you here this morning might have come because of that from a previous event. Here's the type of information that you'll get. We're not going to spam you. We're not going to fill your inbox with junk. It's just to provide you with credible answers to your questions. You might get something like this. Swimming school of fish has been fossilized in real time. What does it take to simultaneously fossilize a school of fish, 257 of them, all swimming in formation? Does that sound like something that would take place over long periods of time or over a short period of time? And does anybody know of a story in the Bible where there was a lot of water, a lot of erosion, a lot of sedimentation in a relatively short amount of time? Noah's flood explains a lot of what we see in the geologic record and the fossil record. Sometimes they're culturally relevant topics as well as scientifically relevant. I could take a poll, and I'm pretty sure it would be 100% of you have spoken of, thought of, discussed your immune system more in the last 3 years than ever before in your life. COVID, the pandemic, changed the way we think about things, the way we do things. But we need to remember our immune system is and was designed by God. It's a design marvel. And CMI has written several articles on this. Or it might be something very relevant to what we're going to do today. And this is basically the question for the morning. Did God create over millions and billions of years? And does it even matter? That's what we're going to look at this morning. So if we go back to our parent-child cartoon, what's the next stage of life for this young boy? He turns into a teenager. Not a trick question. Turns into a teenager. So what's happening to our teens? What's happening to our young adults? Well, research shows that unfortunately, 2/3 of them are intending to walk away from their faith when they leave home. When they get out of mom and dad's house, their plan is to walk away. Often the youth say, the church didn't have any answers. I believe in science, not the Bible, and I'm out. There may be teens in this church. We've got a whole bunch down in Thrive right now. There may be teens there that have already made up their minds to go. There are answers, though. It just takes a little bit of time, a little bit of focus to find them, and it's worth the effort. Sadly, 70% are successful in carrying out their intentions. They do walk away. They say Christianity was irrelevant, uninspiring, and it was just a phase. I don't want this to happen to my kids, and I certainly don't want it to happen to yours. You may already know someone or a family that this has happened to. We hear about it at CMI. We hear about it all the time. There's 5 or 6 full-time speakers, and there's 2 of us that are part-time. One guy's in California. I'm obviously up here in Maine in the Northeast. And we go out every Sunday. There's probably 300 of these presentations that go on each year, Sunday morning, Sunday night. And we hear about this particular issue all the time. That's why we completed a documentary on it a number of years ago. We interviewed students on college campuses and asked 4 very simple questions. As they were passing by, we said, hey, did you grow up in church? If they said no, we let them keep going because we really wanted to talk to those that did grow up in church. So if they grew up in church, we said, do you believe in evolution or creation? Those that said they believe in evolution, only one of them still goes to church. And none of them had heard and learned growing up how science fits with the Bible. If they said, I grew up in church and I believe in creation, all of them still attend church. And all of them had learned how science fits with the Bible as they were growing up. So what's the take-home message? It's simply that families that teach and discuss creation and evolution in the home are raising children that are stronger in their faith. So that begs the question, what can we do? What can you do to reach your children or the children that are in your circle of influence? First, you need to give them an alternative answer to their questions. They're going to have questions, and they can find the other answers anywhere else. Go to Google and find the answers to the questions that I posed earlier, and you'll get a different answer. Secondly, it's going to take science. For you to answer their questions, it's going to take an understanding of some scientific concepts, and that might cause panic for some of you because you're like, I hated science in school. I don't want to do it again. The rest of this talk is designed to give you some simple, easy-to-understand concepts that you can apply to any of these questions. I attend this church, so I know we don't talk about science on a weekly basis. At CMI, this is what we do. So when I say science, what first comes to your mind? My guess is you think back to middle school and high school where you followed the scientific method. And you were taught to make an observation about the world around you, form a hypothesis to explain what you see, design an experiment to test that hypothesis, conduct that experiment, collect data, analyze it, write a report, and repeat the process. That's operational science. It occurs in the present. It's observable, repeatable, and testable. This is the science that's given us tremendous medical advances in the last 100 years. It's put men on the moon. It's given you the cell phones that are distracting you in your pocket right now. Historical science, on the other side, doesn't happen in the present by the nature of its name. It's not observable, it's not testable, and it's not repeatable. Both creation and evolution are forms of historical science. We can't go back in time and do it all over again. And when I say this morning, when we're talking about evolution, what I'm referring to is the account of our origins from molecules to man over long periods of time. And when I say creation, I'm referring to the account of our origins as plainly written in the book of Genesis. And no matter what your beliefs and views are this morning, we can definitely agree that those two things are totally different. They're not the same. And to effectively talk to your children, grandchildren, about this issue, you need to have a really good understanding of historical science. So this is how it might play out. We've got two gentlemen fighting over something. Can you see what they're fighting over? A fossil. They're fighting over a fossil. Creationists on one side, evolutionists on the other. Now, does the fossil occur and exist in the present or the past? I heard both, and I don't mean this as a trick question, but it always comes across that way because we've been conditioned to think of fossils as the past. But here's the thing, the fossil exists in the present. We make interpretations about the past based on the evidence we have in the present. So who has the most evidence? Is it the creationist or the evolutionist? Is it the biologist, the geologist, astronomer? They all have the same evidence. They just make different interpretations from it. Another way to think of this is like two lawyers battling it out in a courtroom. Some of you may recognize this show from the 1980s, Andy Griffith, Matlock. I wanted to be a lawyer as a kid, in part because of this show. Every single week, with 5 minutes left, the prosecution would stand up and say, "Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the evidence that has been presented to you clearly shows that the defendant is guilty. You must find him or her guilty as charged." And then Matlock stands up in his rumpled suit and southern drawl, and he says the exact opposite. "No, no, no, no. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the evidence that's been presented to you clearly shows that my client is innocent, and you must acquit him or her of all charges." Every single week, Matlock won. I thought I'd be Matlock. I want to win. The truth was always on his side. Well, it's just a TV show. Makes sense. But I think as Christians, what we need to remember, and sometimes we forget, is that the truth is always on our side, too. And where do we go for truth? We go to the Bible. And where do we go for truth about our origins? We go to the Bible, but in particular, we go to the book of Genesis. Unfortunately, in our culture and society today, but also even in churches, to be honest, people say things like, Genesis doesn't really matter. It's a side issue. There's many different ways to interpret it. We don't have to focus on that. But Genesis does matter to you and to your families, because if you think back a few slides where those teens were walking away from their faith because they didn't have a proper understanding of the book of Genesis, it is important. Genesis cannot be removed or ignored in the Bible. It's there for a reason. And that may seem like an odd statement. You might think, well, yeah, of course, we can't take it away. But sometimes we take it away in our brain by ignoring it. And we can't ignore it. This slide, I know, is kind of ugly, but what I hope you can see from wherever you're sitting are a bunch of blue lines and a bunch of red lines. The words at the top are the 66 books of the Bible from left to right. Same on the bottom, Genesis through Revelation, left to right. The blue lines represent cross-references from books of the Old Testament to other books of the Bible, new and old. The red lines represent cross-references from books of the New Testament to other books of the Bible, new and old. There's over 2,800 different cross-references, so the Bible is intricately connected. It's interwoven. And you and I can't pick and choose the stuff we don't want to accept. Even though I am in full agreement with you, there's things in there that I don't like and I wish weren't there. I might think my life would be easier if I didn't have that thing written there. But it's not up to me. I didn't write it. With Genesis in particular, there's over 100 different cross-references or references to Genesis from books of the New Testament. 60 of those references go back to the first 11 chapters of Genesis, and Jesus himself refers to Genesis, first 11 chapters, 16 different times. How many is enough? I still am skeptical. I'm a skeptic by nature, so I would ask the question in reverse. Well, what if I don't take it literally? Again, why does it matter? Well, if Genesis is not real literal history with a literal very good creation and a literal Adam and Eve, then sin didn't literally enter the world through their actions, and you and I do not literally need to be saved from anything. And we all know that last part is not true. Genesis helps us answer the three most important questions in life. And I know all of you have asked yourselves these questions at some point in time. Maybe not this order, maybe not the exact wording, but we've all asked ourselves, where did I come from? What's my purpose in life? And what happens when I die? How you answer the last two depends on how you answer the first one. So ultimately, what we've been talking about so far is a worldview issue. Biblical worldview, evolutionary, secular worldview. So let's look at the timelines for comparison. Biblical timeline has humans at the very beginning, day six. About 6,000 years ago was creation, 4,500 years ago, Noah's flood, and about 2,000 years ago, Jesus came on the scene. We get that timeline by interpreting the Bible. There's all kinds of places where it lists the lifespan of someone and how old they were when their son was born, and then how long their son lived. And you can piece that together into what's called a chronogenealogy. And you go to creation.com for more information on that. But suffice it to say, the Bible gives us the biblical timeline. I assume this is not new information to you in that you know it. The question this morning is, do you believe it? Because there's a competing worldview out there that fights for our attention. And that competing worldview is the evolutionary one. Very different timeline, 14 billion years for the Big Bang. Earth being formed 4.5 billion years ago. First life, 3 billion years ago. And that puts humans at the other end of that spectrum. So no matter what our views are this morning, you may differ from me, but we can definitely agree that these two views aren't the same. They both can't be right. They both can't be true at the same time. So where does truth come from? That's another really good question to start off with, or to continue with. And if we compare these two worldviews, we have the tree of Christianity, which is rooted in creation, where God's word decides truth. And we have the tree of humanism, that's rooted in evolution, where man decides truth. And you can see for yourselves the fruit that's produced from those two trees. If God is our creator and we are his creation, I'll make it personal. If God is my creator and I am his creation, then he has the right to tell me right from wrong. He has the right to tell me what to do. And he has given me direction from the Bible in that. But if man is the production of millions of years of evolution and random chance, well, you can see what fruit is produced from that view. And that's what's going on in our culture and society right now. So when you ask a question, do you want the right answer or the wrong one? Do you want truth for the questions that you ask? Obviously, we want truth. You want that for your family. So normally at this point in the talk, I go back to this list of questions, and I usually can get through a couple of them. But the way we're structuring things at Crosspoint this time, this is sort of the introduction to the Sunday night series. So for the next 6 weeks or so, I'm going to be answering these questions, and there's a big question mark at the end. Then there's going to be time for people to ask their own questions, and I'll do my best to point them in the right direction. So this morning, instead of answering a couple and kind of super fast going through this, I'm just going to partially answer the first one. Did God literally make the universe and everything in it in 6 days? We've all probably heard that the days of creation each represent millions of years, long periods of time, right? Am I the only one, or we've got a few other? We've all heard that, right? But there's no room for that interpretation in the Bible. There's no room for inserting days or making each one of these days long periods of time. Whether it's day one, God creating the heavens and the earth, all the way through to day six, where he created land animals, including us. Some of the arguments that I've heard for inserting long periods of time, at least from the Bible biblical perspective, are verses like 2 Peter 3:8. With the Lord, a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years are like a day. And people say, aha, each day can be a long period of time. See? The problem is, this verse is not talking about creation at all. Scoffers were saying, where is his coming? It's talking about Christ's return. And this verse is talking about the patience of God, that he's not willing for anyone to perish. God is outside of time, and this verse doesn't have anything to do with an ordinary day or creation. Besides, there's lots of other verses where it plainly says 6 days. The Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them. And on the seventh, he rested. He didn't rest for 7 million years. We have an issue, or I said most people have an issue just really with how the word day is used in Genesis. Genesis chapter 1, verse 5, 8, 13, 19, 23, and 31. They all have a key phrase. There was evening and morning, and then one day, the second day, third day, fourth day, fifth day, sixth day. We only question the use of the word day in Genesis chapter 1. The Hebrew word for day is yom, and when it's used the same way that it is in Genesis chapter 1, 523 other times in the Bible, we never question it. So why do we only question its use in Genesis chapter 1? That's a very good question. It's also a good question at this point to say, okay, maybe you're sort of convincing me and moving me along in my thought process, but what about the long time periods that we read about and see in modern geology? How do I reconcile what I see and what I'm taught about the Grand Canyon if Genesis is truly six literal days and the earth is only 6,000 years old? What do I do with the millions of years that are presented in the Grand Canyon? We're going to talk about this a lot more on the Sunday night series, but I'm going to give you two short answers to it right now to hopefully whet your appetite. First, layers of rock and canyons don't require long periods of time to form. And I'll give you an example of that. Second, rock ages have been misinterpreted in the past using radiometric dating techniques. And I'll give you an example of that one. The example we're going to use is from Mount St. Helens. It's relevant because it happened in a lot of our lifetime, or we're only one person removed from it, and it was observed. We have recordings of it. If you're not familiar with this, the earthquake caused the north side of the mountain to slide away. An eruption of steam and gas exploded northward towards Spirit Lake, and the eruption lasted 9 hours on May 18th, 1980, and it changed the landscape there forever. And I hope where you're sitting, you can see three distinct sections in this particular picture. The first was the ash that was laid down during the initial eruption, basically airfall material. So we have section one. Section two, a month later, another eruption. A hot mix of gas and debris laid down 22 feet of finely layered sediment in just 3 hours. Now, if I didn't tell you, if you didn't believe me, if we couldn't go and confirm it, we might think each one of those layers took thousands of years to form or to be laid down. But it took 3 hours, and we know it because it was observed. The top section was laid down after a mud flow. Probably 2 years later, mud flow went through the valley and deposited another section. So the question to ask here with Mount St. Helens is if one, I'll put in quotation marks, one little volcano could do this much devastation in a matter of hours, imagine or try to imagine what a global flood would do over a whole year with all the seismic activity and volcanic activity associated with that. If we go to canyon formation, we were taught, at least I was taught in school, that this would be formed by a little bit of water over a long period of time. A little bit of water, a little bit of erosion over a long period of time. But we can go back to Mount St. Helens and look at an example where the Little Grand Canyon, which is 1/40th the size of the Grand Canyon, was carved out in 9 hours. That mud flow ripped through the valley at 40 miles an hour and carved the Little Grand Canyon in 9 hours. It was a lot of water over a little bit of time, not the other way around. From the rock ages radiometric dating standpoint, a lava plug or lava dome formed at the top of Mount St. Helens a number of years later, and a sample of that rock was taken and sent for radiometric testing. The whole rock came back with an age of 350,000 years, and when they broke it into mineral components, they gave a range of 340,000 years all the way up to 2.8 million years. None of them make sense because we know the rock was less than 10 years old. We know when it formed. So there's a taste of what we're going to do tonight and over the next few weeks. And if this piques an interest, I'd encourage you to come back. But the question at this point, really, and if you're a skeptic like I would be, I'd be sitting in the back saying, well, so what, Jeff? Why does this even matter? Why can't we just focus on the important doctrines and just avoid this? It's a good question, and in order to answer it, we need to go back to the Garden of Eden. The Bible describes a perfect paradise. What did God say about his creation on the sixth day? I think I heard it. He said it was very good, and it was very good. It was very good until death entered the world through Adam's sin. Let me ask you another rhetorical question. Is sin, or are sin, death, disease, and suffering, are they good things? No, they're not good things. But if you put your Garden of Eden, if you believe in millions of years, you're putting your Garden of Eden on top of millions of years of death, disease, and suffering. And that's not what God called very good. In Genesis chapter 1, verse 31, he called this very good. And he created it that way, and he gave Adam a warning. He said, you are free to eat from any tree in the garden, but you must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, for when you eat from it, you will surely die. God was fair. He gave a warning. He told him not to do it, and Adam said, I'm going to do it anyway. And as a result of that, sin entered the world through his actions, or his sin caused death to enter the world. And as a result of that, the Apostle Paul tells us that we have inherited Adam's sin nature. Just as sin entered the world through one man, and death through sin, in this way death came to all men because all sinned. You don't have to teach a two-year-old to do the wrong thing. Fortunately, God had a full plan in place when this happened. The end of the book tells us that there will be a new heaven and a new earth. Praise God for that. His righteousness demands a penalty for sin, and that's death. But his plan includes a new heaven, a new earth, no more mourning, no more crying, no more pain. The old things will wash away. We serve a loving and a just God, and we praise him for this, but we also need to be practical too. We're not at this point in time yet. We live here now, and we're still in a battle. There's a battle going on for the souls of men, women, and children all over the world, in the United States, in Maine, in Bangor, even at Cross Point Church this morning at the 9:30 service. We're in a battle. Now, at the beginning of this talk, I shared with you that My goal was to show you where and how you could find information to answer questions like these that are part of the battle. Showed you that you can go to creation.com, gave you an opportunity to sign up for an email newsletter. In a few moments, not quite yet, but in a few moments, I'm going to give you an opportunity to sign up for the magazine, Creation Magazine. It's what we call our most effective weapon in this battle. It's been produced in over 100 different countries. It's been in publication for, I think we're pushing about 40 years. There's no ads in it. It's just content to help answer questions that people have. And so this morning, give you an opportunity to do that. The key thing with signing up today is that you'll get a free digital version that you can share on up to 5 different devices. Now, truth be told, you can send it to as many people as you want. Just we want you to get it out there, but we have to put some number on it. Typically, this is about a $20 value in and of itself, but if you get the magazine today, you'll get this for free. You also get, you know, monthly newsletters and things like that. So the 1-year subscription, you'll get your first issue today, and you'll get that digital version to share. If you do a 2-year subscription, we'll also give you 2 other gifts. One is a Darwin documentary. So this is a documentary where we retrace Charles Darwin's steps when he had his voyage on the Beagle, and we approached it from the point of view of, if Darwin knew what we know today, would he still be an evolutionist? You can also, or you will also get the Fallout DVD, where you can hear firsthand why young adults are walking away from their faith in their own words. So I'll get those guys to pass out the clipboards. I think they're probably coming in here pretty soon. I'm subliminally suggesting the 2-year one. You fill out the typical address stuff, but make sure, if you do it today, to print your email address clearly, because that's how you'll get the digital version to share. It's on a perforated edge, so tear it off if you fill it out, and at the end of the service, take that form to the book table in the foyer. We'll process your payment and give you the free gifts, okay? As we're doing that, if you guys could come and hand those out, maybe. This is really our most effective evangelism and outreach tool, okay? We get more testimonies from people that have read articles in it, that have really been touched by what they've heard. People either share a digital version or give the magazine to somebody. And in the Sunday night series, I'm going to be grabbing examples where appropriate from the magazine. So here's one we'll look at tonight: Polystrate fossils, evidence for a young Earth. It's not possible that these fossils, which cut across several layers in the geologic record, were buried gradually over many thousands or hundreds of thousands of years. Because the top part of the tree would have rotted away before it could be protected by sediment. Polystrate fossils point to rapid burial and are evidence for the reality of a global flood. Another fossil example that highlights the rapid burial nature is this fossil of an ichthyosaur that was fossilized while giving birth. That's not something that would take place over a long period of time and hold that level of detail. It had to have been buried rapidly. There's also a lot of evidence to suggest that dinosaurs lived a lot more recently than we're taught. This is a blood vessel under a microscope showing red blood cells in dinosaur bones that are supposed to be at least 65 million years old. This is soft tissue, basically unfossilized material that has been found in dinosaur bones. And the researcher that discovered this is quoted as saying it was exactly like looking at a slice of modern bone. But of course, I couldn't believe it. Why couldn't she believe it? Because she's locked into her worldview that it has to be long periods of time. She said the bones are, after all, 65 million years old. How could blood cells survive that long? Well, the short answer is they're not that old. But it's very difficult. This goes back to the gentleness and respect component of having conversations with people. It's very difficult to unlearn something that you've been taught before. I'm always asked, what resources would you suggest for this? The Creation Answers book is probably the best one. 60 of the most common questions that people have asked: how are fossils made? What is carbon dating? What about the Ice Age? just enough material in there to answer the question, but also to show you where you can find some additional. Evolution's Achilles' Heels, a little more technical in nature, but very well done in that 9 PhD scientists in their field of study have gone on the offensive and have poked holes and attacked the theory of evolution. Instead of being on the defensive on the Christian side, they've gone out and addressed the issues head on. There's a lot of DVDs if reading's not your thing. And I would also highlight a lot of the children's books and children's packs might be of interest to you as well. So I challenge you at the very beginning to engage your mind as a form of worship. And I hope some of the things I've said raise questions in your mind. That is a form of worship, as long as we then move it to seeking answers. Always be prepared to give an answer. I hope you now see why it's important to be prepared, because your children and grandchildren are going to ask questions on this topic. So I thank you for your attention and time. I'll be at the book table and back, and I'll turn things over to Adam.